from mainstream media. Has anything changed from 2002 to 2003 to right now? And the answer in this study is absolutely not. If anything, the debate is more restricted now.
How did you do this study?
These are the guests that showed up for debate and discussion segments, so not sound bites, people who are invited to one-on-one interviews on the Sunday shows, on PBS NewsHour, and on a couple of the high-profile cable shows, Wolf Blitzer, Special Report on Fox News Channel.
You are activism director of FAIR. What are you recommending?
Well, you know, the most obvious thing to ask people to do is to contact these shows and say, if we're going to war, and, you know, this week Congress is going to debate this war, the authorization for use of military force, have people who oppose the war. I know it sounds like a radical idea, but anti-war activists are more than happy to show up on television and debate this if they're given the chance.
And, of course, if you look back to 2002 and 2003, it was the anti-war activists, the few peace activists you saw on television, who ultimately were correct that there weren't weapons of mass destruction.
Absolutely. And, you know, there isn't a question right now about WMDs. The question is violence the answer to this political problem that we have? And you would think the lessons from Afghanistan, from Iraq, and from Libya would be there's a need to have this debate, but the big media says no.
Peter Hart, thanks so much for being with us. Activism Director of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté. Our website's democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and heard around the world at www.kbu.fm. The time is 5:01. Stay tuned for the KBOO Evening News. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, committed to helping our community's most vulnerable people for over 100 years, and to giving them a hand up rather than a hand out. More information is available on the web at voaor.org.
Oh, pirates, yes, to my right.
Hear poetry from the prisoners at the Oregon State Penitentiary.
Hood anthems become multi-million-dollar commercial jingles. But the question is, who's getting paid? And who's really getting played? Such a volatile minefield.
In this world of cold concrete and lifeless steel, there is no warmth here, no affection, no touch.
But more than the cacophonous conversation, I crave the pleasure of feeling myself. I need you to keep me sensitive.
Hear the Uhuru Sasa Poetry Share on Prison Pipeline, November 24th at 6:30 p.m.
Triumphantly, won't you help me sing this song of freedom?
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Forest Service wants to allow fracking in the George Washington National Forest.
Clackamas County is changing how it enforces marijuana laws.
And the U.S. Senate rejects the Keystone XL pipeline proposal. News for Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. I'm Eric Degadoff.
And I'm Emily Young. Marijuana charges against 12 defendants will be dismissed under a new policy announced today in Clackamas County. Earlier this month, changes to the marijuana laws were approved when voters passed Measure 91. The new rules don't take effect until July 1st. Some communities are already moving to adapt to the new world of marijuana legalization. Clackamas County District Attorney John S. Foote announced today that his office will begin treating all pending and new marijuana cases under the rules of Measure 91. Possession of large amounts of pot remain illegal, as does possession by people under age 21. Unlicensed sales also remain illegal. Clackamas County has a total of 39 pending marijuana cases. 12 of those cases will now be dismissed, while some of the remaining cases will now have the level of punishment reduced.
Agent Orange was a chemical defoliant sprayed over millions of acres in Vietnam during that war. Millions of Vietnamese and Americans were exposed to that toxin. Hundreds of thousands continue to suffer from the effects, which include diabetes, neuropathy, and various cancers. Agent Orange is also responsible for a number of birth defects. The organization Vietnam Veterans of America is holding town hall meetings around the country to discuss the ongoing legacy of Agent Orange. The Portland Town Hall meeting is scheduled for Saturday, November 22nd. It will be the first such meeting held at an actual VA hospital. The meeting starts at 1:30 p.m. in the auditorium at Portland's VA hospital. More information is available on the Vietnam Veterans of America website at vva.org.
Last night, author and journalist Don Paley spoke at Portland State University. Don is the author of the new book, Drug War Capitalism, which looks at the terror that has been unleashed on Latin American countries due to the current U.S. drug policy. She also investigates the economic and political policies of the United States drug war in countries such as Mexico and Colombia.
So the GAO reports on Plan Colombia, which are coming out like 2007, 2008, are basically saying, like, you know what, epic fail on the drug part. Like, drug production was not reduced. In fact, in a lot of places it actually rose, or, you know, there's not really strong data all the time, but there's no significant decrease in the amount of cocaine moving from Colombia to the United States, even though we spent like over $3 billion supposedly with that end, right? But they said in these annexed documents that I found, these rejoinders, basically, like, folks from the State Department and USAID said, but it was really successful. We changed all these regulations, and it just really improved the climate for investment, and it allowed Colombia to sign a free trade agreement with Canada and then with the United States. So that was kind of like, when I found that, I was like, okay, there's my, like, there's a crack right there in terms of, like, what the official discourse is telling us and, like, what we can start learning about this if we start digging. So in terms of the, I have like three kind of ways that I break down the impacts of like Plan Colombia and the Merit Initiative. The first is the sort of legal and regulations changes. The second is the militarization of the country. And the third is the deepening of processes of paramilitarization. So just to go over them quickly and their impacts in Colombia. And with the legal system, it's the same in both Colombia and Mexico. It's basically they introduce a U.S. legal system. They take the old legal system out, which is in Mexico was a, they call it a written adversarial system. So it's like a totally different kind of court system than here. In Colombia, they took away a bunch of guarantees, including like legal aid and all kinds of things that people could access still through the states to actually access a little bit of justice. And they replaced it with a U.S.-style legal system with no juries. So basically, if you actually look at the U.S. legal system, the part of it that people have like the tiniest bit of faith in is the fact that there is a jury. And so in these cases, there's no jury. It's just introducing oral trials. It's just a way to expedite, essentially, the legal process. But it also allows U.S. corporations, basically, to hire a Spanish-speaking lawyer, even a U.S. lawyer, and work down there and represent their clients as if they were in the U.S. So it also, you know, has this other element. We could see investors saying, well, we want to invest in Colombia, but we don't understand the legal system. And this is a major barrier in terms of us actually going, you know, we're going to invest a couple hundred million dollars in your country. So boom, Plan Colombia changes the legal system completely. The second piece is around militarization. So in Colombia, I mean, just like with Mexico, the money isn't actually cash being given to local governments. It's all like in kind. So like Black Hawk helicopters is always like one of the big ticket items. Lots of arms, etc., and maintenance and training and how to use and so on. And then also training classes for police and for soldiers. And in the case of Plan Colombia, it was actually very much more obvious than they've made it with Plan Mexico. For example, with Plan Colombia, U.S. Special Forces trained battalions to guard U.S.-owned pipelines. So it's like, okay, we're using this so-called, like supposedly anti-drugs money to train soldiers to guard U.S. pipelines. Great, you know, like, yeah, good combo. And then the last piece of Plan Colombia is or these plans in general, is that I argue that when that militarization takes place, so U.S.-backed militarization of local armies and local police, already existing or new armed groups form. It creates conflict. And so there's studies in Colombia that show, and this is empirical data, that in Colombian military bases that received more money from the US government, there was a proportional increase in paramilitary attacks in the regions surrounding the bases. So there's a direct correlation between, you know, US-backed militarization and paramilitary groups, or like in Mexico, they're called drug cartels, actually arming themselves back to clash against certain parts of the state.
That was Dawn Paley at Portland State University last night. Tonight, Dawn is reading from her new book, Drug War Capitalism, at Reading Frenzy on North Mississippi Avenue at 7 p.m.
And now we go to Paul Cienfuegos for a weekly segment on taking back our authority to govern ourselves.
Greetings, you are listening to the weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. This week I wanted to do a bit of an election wrap-up. No, not a review of the mostly awful results from state and federal candidate and ballot initiatives across the country. You've already heard plenty about those election results. This week I wanted to share with you the status of the rapidly growing community rights movement, which had 6 local elections on the ballot across the U.S., and we won 2 of them. Not a bad average for a new social movement whose goals are nothing less than dismantling and rewriting our nation's structures of law that allow corporate rights to trump our rights. There are now about 200 communities and 2 counties